I felt like an orphan and I needed a family. And when I started coming to the temple, it felt like I was home with all of my relatives, dysfunctional or not.
On In Good Faith, we believe that all faith traditions have something to teach us about how God is working in the world and in our lives. So join us as we listen and learn. This week on In Good Faith, we're speaking with someone who has experience both in psychiatry and as a Buddhist priest, and has put this all together in a way that makes her a fascinating guest, Dr. Carmela Havalana. I'm excited for you to get to know her. In studio with me is our senior producer, Heather Bigley.
Hello, Carmela Havalana. She's a priest at the Salt Lake Buddhist Temple since 2010. She leads meditation service, teaches Buddhism classes. She's also the founder and director of Sheen, a sanctuary for healing and integration.
And also producer Josh Orton.
Hello, hello.
What should we be listening for?
Well, I just love this sort of deep dive on suffering. I don't think we went into the interview thinking that's what we were going to talk about, but it was a theme that came up again and again. And I love this moment when, listen for it, when she says, we don't have to suffer. And we don't have to suffer about suffering. So wrap your minds around that one.
Yeah, I love how she's talking about how Buddhism has really helped her not necessarily avoid suffering, because she's like, well, we're all pathetic, but we're going to suffer. But how it helps her understand suffering and understand how to maybe cope with it a little bit better.
For some reason, we all are surprised when bad things happen to us. I mean, somewhere along the way, we should know, like, every so often, a tire will go flat, or worse yet, we'll lose someone we love. And yet, it so often comes to us as a surprise. How could this happen in my otherwise happy life?
Right.
Except for all the things that keep happening all of the time. So she has this very human experience of something happening to her, in this case, losing a close family member, that sets her on a journey of looking inside, discovering Buddhism, and then sharing what she's learned with so many people.
I came to Buddhism in my midlife crisis. I was born and raised in the Philippines. My family's staunch Catholic.
Was there some aspect that, as you started to look into it, you thought, this is for me?
Yeah.
What was it that spoke to you?
Well, it was crisis. It's like an opening, like a wound that suddenly grabs you and brought me to my knees, right? And crisis, according to the Chinese, is also opportunity. Rahm Emanuel said something about never let a crisis go to waste. And so crisis, I think, brings people to a deeper level of awareness about how painful the human experience can be. And that pain, in a way, wakes us up to the reality that this is more serious than we thought. Mm. We can stay on the surface and be superficial about it, but ultimately something gets us and hits us in the head, like a real alarm that you wake up to. It's supposed to pushing the snooze button. And you wake up to this reality, right, that we call suffering. So for me, suffering itself also has an existential purpose in our development as human beings. Hmm. So probably one of the biggest crises that any one of us can experience is loss, is grief. So my mother died in 1999. And I never thought that I would be in such a dark place, because I thought, oh, she's 84, I'm here, she's over there, we're cool, we've worked some things out, that sort of thing. But I think what that was a sense of complete aloneness, because she was the matriarch in my family. She was the glue that held everybody together. So even after I left home and settled in the U.S., she kept that communication going. That was that connection going. And then when she died, it was like, that's it. It's over. I mean, not true, right? But at that moment, it's like,
that's what it felt like.
That's what it felt like. Yeah, it was just this blackness. And you know what? When you're in total blackness, any little bit of light is noticeable. It really gets your attention. For me, metaphorically speaking, that light was the glowing tip of an incense stick. And the first step was going into Zen. I started to do some research on meditation. And then it led me to practicing what we call Zazen, right? These long sitting in silence. and discovery of the inner workings of my own mind that also informed me about the inner workings of what human minds do. But beyond what psychiatry has taught me, it went more into the existential and the philosophical aspects of the mind. So really, in that way, it provided more panoramic perspective of what life really is. It's beyond what anyone thinks it is. And the way that I suppose you can really fathom it is to just dive in. And that's where I think my psychiatric practice comes in, because a lot of people are really scared of diving in without a Sherpa. And that's how I see my role, is a Sherpa, a companion.
Yeah, on the steep and dangerous climb. I really like how you talked about being brought to something by crisis. I mean, I myself have joked about midlife crisis number one and number two, kind of laughing as I look back, but that doesn't mean it wasn't very real. And the time of change and rethinking and asking again the questions of who actually am I and what do I want to be about in my life. I heard once, and maybe you can comment on this, that someone said that you only suffer as long as you need to, meaning that you need this suffering to get you to some certain event or opening of the mind or heart or some event like that. Does that make sense to you?
Yes, yes, yes. Well, you know, I would partly agree with that, but from a subjective perspective, no one needs to suffer. But the reality is we suffer anyway. And so we have to challenge our thinking about how to put this suffering in perspective. We don't need to suffer about suffering. We can just suffer, period.
I'm wondering if you feel that what you connect to as what I think I'll call the divine, or some would say God, is a similar thing to what you connected with in your youth in a different tradition.
It's completely different. Mm-hmm. Completely different. And maybe it's the way that I received religious instruction.
Ah.
And also, I really hadn't experienced life very much, so I was kind of really clueless about what suffering was about. My childhood was really quite careless, carefree, climbing trees after school, that sort of thing.
I've heard some describe Buddhism as a philosophy, others as a religion or a faith. And what do you think?
Well, it's all of it.
Mm-hmm.
For me, it feels like a life of awareness, self-examination, testing reality, challenging my own beliefs, cultivating an understanding and a fearlessness, if you will, about what this whole suffering thing is all about, and empathizing with other people's suffering as well, you know, recognizing that connection, that we are all in this together, although your suffering is unique and very special, and we need to talk about that and unpack it and process it and see how that makes sense to you. But from a universal perspective, no one is exempt from suffering. So in that sense, suffering is non-discriminatory. But it sucks if we just leave it at that, right? And so we have to get beyond the limitations of our understanding of suffering. So this is kind of where I think religion plays a part in filling some of the existential questions that we have that become very personal. That really becomes our personal responsibility to take care of.
Yeah, that's really interesting. You talk about personal practice, and yet to be a priest is to help bind a community. I'm wondering, so even though it is a personal practice and some inward-looking meditation, what is it that's important to us in a faith community? Why do we need that community? Mm-hmm. Why is that so important?
So this makes me think about how the Buddha finally realized after his enlightenment that he cannot keep all of this to himself. He has to share it, right? Because what good is it if only you know about this eureka moment, right? His enlightenment was like big, huge blow on the head, if you will, right? An awakening. I mean, what good is it if you don't share it with other people? In Buddhism, it's worked. emulating the practices of an enlightened being who stopped short of being a Buddha to come back to the world of suffering and help alleviate suffering in this realm is all about really sharing what benefits me may benefit you, and what benefits you can benefit me. So let's get together and talk about what this is. So it's a sense of community that I think prompts the need for, or the role for, a priest. Not really so much to teach, although that, I guess, comes with the territory, but really more to provide a social connection that people can come together and ask their questions and, you know, share their experiences about life and suffering and how to get beyond suffering, that sort of thing.
Yeah. You've been on a journey in your life spiritually.
Yes.
What do you wish people knew about Buddhism?
It's not centralized at all. It's multiformic. There are hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of Buddhist schools that sort of follow certain teachings that make sense to them as a community. So, for example, the Zen community focuses mostly on the Lotus Sutra, or Jodo Shinshu focuses on the larger sutra, Amida Sutra, Contemplation Sutra. So there are all these teachings like that make sense, that sort of resonates with one's reality, that allows them to carry on with their really difficult lives, that it's a spiritual sanctuary, if you will, that they could rest their minds in as a way of soothing, as a way of escaping, or as a way of reducing their sense of suffering. Meditation is a practice of the monastic traditions, like Zen. So if you're more on the lay side of things, like Shinshu, we don't meditate. We work. We have fundraisers. We have boutiques and barbecues and street festivals and that sort of thing.
Yeah,
it seems kind of parochial or ordinary, but I think that that's the beauty of the religion too, that really appeals to ordinary folk. And that's why it's the biggest sect in Japan, because it's so ordinary. And I guess ultimately Buddhism is really about understanding the nature of suffering and how to live this life with the least amount of suffering as possible. Mm.
You've been at the Salt Lake Buddhist Temple since 2010. Is there any particular thing about that community, that place, that makes it feel like your spiritual home?
Yeah. Actually, I started going there in 2005 when I married my husband, Reverend Jerry Hirano. Mm. And I go, why hasn't anyone been talking about Jodo Shinshu? What's going on? This temple has been here since 1912. It's like, I feel like I've been cheated, you know, from this amazing community. But I think the reason for that quietness, I suppose, in this community is the trauma of World War II.
Oh, yeah. Many members of that community were Japanese.
Yes.
And so, obviously, many were actually sequestered, taken away during World War II, and then difficult to find acceptance for some time after.
Right. And you could also imagine the discrimination, right?
Right.
And the abuse and the maltreatment of the Japanese-American community. I mean, all of that is traumatic. And we know that trauma is handed down from generation to generation, like genetically. So I think that explains why the Jodo Shinshu community is a bit reticent to admitting or welcoming people of non-Japanese descent. And so when I first started coming to that temple, I mean, I'm not Japanese. I'm Filipino, right? Filipinos are very different from Japanese. There's this quality of Japanese called enryo, okay, which is holding back in deference to the other person, right? Filipinos don't have enryo. you put them in a situation, they'll go right for it, right? They have no shame. And so when I first started coming to that temple, I think the only reason why people were kind to me was because I was married to the temple minister, right? It wasn't until later that I had to realize I had to behave like a minister's wife, learn kind of the protocol that way.
Interesting.
Yeah. It felt almost like I was this street urchin or something, sort of lost, you know, kind of an orphan. I felt like an orphan and I needed a family. And when I started coming to the temple, it felt like I was home with all of my relatives, dysfunctional or not.
You're listening to In Good Faith. We'll be back with Dr. Carmela Havilana in just a moment. I'm Stephen Cap Perry, host of the In Good Faith podcast, and I want to tell you about another in our family of BYU radio podcasts, an award-winning show with an award-winning host. This is Julie Rose on Top of Mind. Do you get turned off by the news because of how angry and polarizing and even depressing it can be? Doesn't anybody know how to have a civil conversation or weigh two competing ideas without a knee-jerk reaction that if you don't think what I think, you're a bad person? Check out the podcast, Top of Mind. They take one tough topic and they dive deep. And the goal is learning how to stay open and curious, even when you're confronted with different perspectives that may challenge us. Learning how to stick with the discomfort until we feel like we've actually learned and gotten some understanding. We may change our minds, we may not, but every episode will leave you feeling hopeful and empowered to become a better advocate for what does matter to you. Top of Mind, listen to the podcast wherever you get your podcasts. This is In Good Faith. We're speaking with Dr. Carmela Havilana about the purpose of suffering and what we can learn from it in our lives. And I'm wondering, because you have a foot in the world of psychology, psychiatry, what do you see about the need for spirituality in people's lives?
Oh, I think it's everything. I think it's at the core of the questions about what this life is all about, at the core of how we live our lives, so that we have some meaning, we have some purpose, we have some peacefulness. And the reason I say that is because education, information, research that we get from the scientific literature and medical training and the work that scientists do may answer in part, but not entirely, or at least not fill in the gaps about how we live our lives that is more or less satisfying and beneficial to ourselves and to everybody else. And so the spiritual aspect for me constitutes the completeness of this journey from birth to death and even beyond, so that we sort of have a sense of settlement, perhaps, or completion towards the end of that journey, some reconciliation. I guess when I'm talking about psychiatric disorders, it seems so cold and clinical. And the spiritual aspect of it, I think, involves is more of a humanistic and a personal connection with my patients. Mm. When I'm working with patients, I keep the Buddhist framework of openness, of kindness, of empathy in my mind, not so much as a person of authority. I've discarded that take two aspirin and call me in the morning type practice of medicine. Okay, this authoritarian sort of structure, right? Top down.
Right.
I think the biggest influence of Buddhism is how I feel more of a collaborator with my patients, that we share equal responsibility in their care. This is my part and it's their part. And so we are more like fellow travelers, if you will, companions.
Nice. There's something that I think the older I get that I find a little bit satisfying about there being something unknowable. Like, I love the science. I love how we can define and learn about our bodies, our functions, the natural world around us. But I do love that there is something that I detect beyond that.
Yes, the mysterious.
Yeah. Oh, well, there's the word.
From a Buddhist transformational perspective that I've incorporated into my work especially is that this journey requires critical steps. One is the recognition of our suffering, right? If you're in denial, then you're not suffering. You know, nobody comes to see a psychiatrist with no problems. they have come to that point where they are willing to admit that there's something going on that they cannot figure out. So it's time to get help, right? Or see an expert or whatever. So there's a certain humility that comes with that already, right? There's a humility that comes with that. There's an honesty that comes with that. But somehow in my office, we can talk about it more openly because they're not alone. So the ego of the therapist, what we say is we lend it to the patient as a sort of a support, something that they can lean on so that they can venture a little bit deeper into what's really going on in their minds and in their hearts. So it's instilling hope and courage. But I think to me, the most transformative aspect about that is when people tell their stories and their narratives about how they got to this miserable place. It's really hearing themselves speak, is listening to their own suffering, which they dare not do because it's too painful or too threatening on their own. And I think this listening itself is what compassion is all about. When we are listened to, we are acknowledged, we are recognized as real, right? As human beings. We are not invisible anymore. No, we are significant. We are important because we are being listened to.
That compassion you talk about, would you also call that love? Is that a similar?
Yes. Oh, yeah. Mm. Yeah. Here's the thing about language, too, because it's really hard to translate Sanskrit to Chinese, to Japanese, right? Then to English. Something gets a little twisted in the translation. So far, the best that we have come up with is compassion, wisdom and compassion, the two aspects of Buddha, the reality that we call Buddha or truth. For Shinshu Buddhists, the compassion part is really important because our school emphasizes the nature of being human, which is really ultimately pathetic. Hmm. Human beings are pathetic. Meaning that we have no escape from suffering in this life. And we do all kinds of things to escape the suffering to no avail. So we come back to this realization that we really are pathetic and there is absolutely nothing we can do about it. You can go two directions from here. You can either just give up, right? Mm-hmm. Go into full despair and just give up. I can't stand the suffering anymore. Or you start wondering, is this all there is to it? And then you recognize that maybe I'm suffering because this is the way I think about this person or the circumstance. So maybe it's not really so much the reality that makes me suffer. It's my interpretation of the reality that I suffer from, perception. So this is where you come into this, what you call the three poisons of the human mind, right? Greed, anger, ignorance. Mm. Your constant companions, right? Whether you're asleep or awake, ego is imbued with greed, anger, and ignorance. That is at our core, which is maybe another way of interpreting is the aspects of fear, right? So when you get to that point of despair and hopelessness, that is when the crisis is, the spiritual crisis, and maybe the mental crisis, if you will, when you can't go on anymore. And you surrender, essentially, to what is. In my opinion, that's when the light starts to show. Because now you've been broken, you've been wounded, right? And so you don't really have any other choice but to surrender and to open yourself to any sort of relief that's out there. For me, the glowing tip of the incense stick, metaphorically, but really, you start opening your eyes to what else is there that could help you, right?
I've heard that described as awakening, enlightenment.
Awakening. Yeah, it reminds me of this master. He said, now that I'm fully enlightened, I'm just as miserable as I ever was.
but not so worried about it.
But not worried about it anymore. That's just the way it is. And I'm okay with that. Yeah, I'm okay with being miserable. This is essentially the culmination of the journey, if you will, is to be okay with everything, to make peace with everything.
That was Steve talking to Dr. Carmela Havalana, a priest at the Salt Lake Buddhist Temple. I love how Carmela was talking about how crisis brings opportunity. Right? A lot of the times I feel like whenever I'm suffering in my life or like going through a hardship, it's really hard in that moment to say, this is wonderful, this is amazing, this is going to be so good for my life. But in retrospect, I think a lot of the best things have come out of the worst moments in my life. Like at some points I could point to, man, this is the worst day and I can't go on anymore. And then it's like, you know what, like looking back now, oh yeah, that really changed me and that really helped me grow. And like things really like changed for the better because I was changed and because I had a different perspective on things. I think the best things come out of the worst experiences sometimes because we have learned and because we can have a different perspective on things.
I loved hearing all of this emphasis on suffering. I don't think we normally use that word in our tradition. We might say trials. Mm. We might have a different way of expressing it. Suffering really gets down for me to that emotional bareness, that vulnerability, and that internal stress that you feel. And I thought, oh, right, if religion can't help you with this, then what good is it for,
yes.
Right? Mm. And I love this idea from the very end of the interview, right? It's not that it all goes away. It's that now you're given the tools with which to better deal with these things.
She started on this journey when she says that her mother died, which can be a traumatic experience, but she said she thought she was going to be okay. She was prepared. They knew it was coming. Her mother had lived a very long, full life, and boom, it fell on her like a brick. And she starts searching around and starts investigating meditation. And she gets to the point where also at the end she says, to make peace with everything.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lifetime's work for all of us. So I love that we got to speak with her. I'm excited to go up and meet with their congregation in the near future. Many thanks to Carmela Havilana for speaking with us. This episode was produced by Heather Bigley. Our production team also includes Leah King, Katarina Martinic, Josh Orton, and Ashton Rowan. Our post-production sound designers are Mark Hansen, Daniel Phillips, Lauren Sandberg, and Ashton Parkinson. In Good Faith is committed to the idea that we all benefit from hearing people of widely varying backgrounds share their personal experience with faith and belief. In fact, we think people with such experience deserve some of our best listening. If interfaith understanding is important to you, be sure and leave a comment or a review where you get your podcasts, YouTube, Spotify, Apple, wherever, and help spread the word. Find us on Twitter, In Good Faith Pod. Our Instagram and Facebook accounts are In Good Faith Podcast. Find us on YouTube at in-good-faith. In Good Faith is a production of BYU Radio. I'm Stephen Cap Perry. I hope you join me again soon, right here in Good Faith.